This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. My next guest is Stephen Feder. He's a movie producer who's worked with some of the biggest names in the industry, including Richard Linklater, Wong Kar-wai, and Harmony Korine. He also was previously VP of Film Development at Lucasfilm, the studio behind Star Wars. While there, he worked on the movie Solo, about the origins of the character made famous by Harrison Ford. In this scene, the character, played as a young man by Eldon Ehrenreich, is escaping a rough upbringing by enlisting with the Empire, hoping to be trained as a pilot.
What's your name, son?
Han.
What? Who are your people?
I don't have people. I'm alone.
Solo.
Nowadays, Stephen Feder is a producer at T Street Productions, director Rian Johnson's film studio, best known for the movie Knives Out from 2019. Feder was born and raised in Illinois, and he attended the U of I Urbana-Champaign. This past weekend, he was back on campus, addressing new graduates from the U of I's College of Media, the same program where he earned his bachelor's degree 20 years ago. I spoke with him just after those festivities ended Sunday afternoon. Because this part of the show is on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Stephen Feder, welcome to The 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Brian, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So let's begin. I just want to ask a very basic question. What exactly does a producer do?
It's great. My parents ask me the same thing all the time. So I'm very used to answering this question. What is it that you do all the time? A producer, the best way to describe it is project management, right? I think that everybody kind of in various different fields has that sort of project manager role where, you know, you subcontract out things, or you're bringing a whole group of people together to build the project. And a lot of times it starts with just an idea. And so the idea can be brought to me in any way, shape, or form. Usually it's in the form of a script or an idea that needs to be built into a script. Sometimes it's a book, an identified piece of material that you want to make into a film or a television show. And then you become kind of that project manager that starts the process of hiring the people, finding the talent, building the project on the development side. And then as a producer, you then have to find the people to pay for it and or allow you to go into production with a larger amount of money that will be required, you know, build the budget out. So sometimes the producer wears both hats and is able to budget it out and kind of speculate how much it's going to cost to make the film happen that's on the page. And once you have that, then you start to kind of build your team around the production aspects. Once the production kind of happens, and if you're lucky enough to get that far, then you head into the post-production process, which is editing, and then you're kind of overseeing that. A lot of times the director has their own people that they like to use, but in some sense, sometimes you're introducing people and kind of figuring out who would be the best fit creatively for the filmmaker to work on the edit. And then from there, you're working with the studio on the distribution strategy of the film. Sometimes it's a sales process. If it's independent, if you're working directly with the studio, they have their team. And all the while, you're kind of the centerpiece for all of that action. So it can be a pretty an intense amount of work. And usually producers, because we want to have as many things as we can going, you know, we can kind of spread ourselves too thin across too many projects, because most projects unfortunately don't happen. And, you know, I think as a producer, it's really funny. It's like the ones you think are going to end up happening never do. And the ones you don't expect to happen are the ones that end up happening. But it's also about creating momentum and energy and excitement around the project, so that people feel that passion and want to make it as much as you do. Because if you don't feel it, why should they?
It's amazing when you think of how many people go into making a 2-hour movie. I mean, you know, yes. You sit through the credits, in some cases nowadays, you know, hundreds of people.
If you watch a Star Wars movie and you sit at the end of the credits, which God love you if you do, that's really beautiful. Most like Netflix has figured out a way to be like, no, watch this next, forget the credits. It's kind of like, it's so low, but
those were Marvel, so slick in adding those scenes to the credits. You kind of incentivize
smart
people.
Stick around. Mm-hmm. But you see, it's like the credit roll can be almost as long as like the first act of the movie. But it's, you know, I think it's true. And that's something, you know, even as I've been kind of coming back here and talking to students, you know, I think people have this misnomer that, you know, you will, if you want to get into the movie business, you're either going to be a writer, director, or a producer. But really, I mean, there's thousands of different jobs and opportunities that you can find within that ecosystem.
And some a little less reliant on the whims of who can decide what's greenlit or not, right? Editors can usually find work.
That's right.
You know, as I think back on the history of Hollywood, there was an era when producers really were ascendant. I have this book, Memo from David O. Selznick, who I'm sure, as you know, was the legendary producer behind Gone with the Wind and, sure, and Rebecca. But then we kind of went into the auteur era, where the directors were ascendant. And, you know, now, I don't know about you, but I've had that experience where you're watching the Academy Awards and you see the group of people that goes up to collect the Best Picture Oscar and think, I don't know who any of these people are. And then again, now we have this franchise entertainment. You have people like Kathleen Kennedy at Lucasfilm and Kevin Feige of Marvel becoming household names, at least among the fans.
Sure.
This is a long-winded question, but do you see the role of the producer taking on a new dimension of importance in Hollywood, or maybe public appreciation of the role that had been lacking in the auteur era?
I think that's a great question. I'll answer it in how I see myself first, which is I was raised a little bit in both worlds, because I was fortunate enough to work for what I would call a renegade, amazing independent film company called Annapurna Pictures, which really did kind of raise up the idea of the auteur and kind of supporting the auteur. And then I also had the opportunity to work with Kathy Kennedy at Lucasfilm, who is also, you know, a powerhouse, just in a really remarkable producer in her own right. And I think I've learned kind of from both. And I really do feel that my job as a producer is to help the filmmaker realize their vision. So I feel firmly entrenched in the idea that my job isn't to dictate to them, but is to help create a pathway for them to succeed creatively and on the screen and have a great experience doing it. So as a producer, I think that, like, it's okay for me to stand behind people. And I feel like that's where I'm most effective. And I think that's when I can do my job best, is when everyone realizes that I'm there to help make the best version of this and not to make a name for myself. And I think that that's really what's driving my own ambition as a producer and as a supporter of the creative. You know, if I felt that I should have been a director or a writer, then that's what I would be doing. I think I find myself much better as a person who can support and bring out the best that they have to offer and be a fierce advocate for that. So I take a little bit of both. You know, I take pride in the things that I do and the things I work on, but I also think that my job is really to create the best scenario for the creatives that I get a chance to work with to realize their vision.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Stephen Feeder. You're listening to The 21st Show. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and my guest is Stephen Feeder, a producer who's worked with some of the biggest names in film and TV, including Richard Linklater, Wong Kar-wai, and Harmony Korine. He was a VP of film development at Lucasfilm, the studio behind the Star Wars franchise, and he's currently a producer with T Street Productions, the film studio started by Rian Johnson, that's best known for probably the 2019 film Knives Out. You mentioned before the break that you worked at Annapurna Pictures, and that while you were there, you worked on a film called Spring Breakers. Can you just talk about what was your role in that film, and just maybe as a for instance of what a producer does?
In that particular role, I served more as an executive. So my job is really to help in the latter part of the process, which is once the film was kind of produced and made, Annapurna came on and said, we love this and we want to get this out into the world. And so we partnered with, at the time, I think it was A24's first film as a distributor, which they've now gone on to just be an incredible supporter of wonderful auteur-driven and also really beautiful films. And that was an opportunity for us to kind of link hands and arms together to help really elevate a movie that was unique and kind of wild and had a specific audience. So I think collectively, we really worked to get that out to people that we thought would appreciate it. And I think that was, so my part of the process in that regard came on towards the tail end of the production process. But again, it was, you know, this is the job of an executive or a producer can come in many different forms. That one came towards the end while, you know, with something like Everybody Wants Some, which was the Richard Linklater movie, you know, I was day to day on production with Rick and the team and really had the time of my life making a movie like that with a bunch of kids that are really kind of becoming their own success stories, and was just a really beautiful experience. So that is something that, you know, it depends on the project, but with Harmony and then with Rick, it varies. And again, my job really is to help get the creative's vision seen in the way that they want it to be seen, and by as many people as possible.
What kind of movies did you watch as a kid?
Well, ironically, I mean, some of the best movies that I was inspired by would have been things that luckily I had the opportunity to work with Kathy Kennedy, but that she worked on. So Back to the Future, E.T., Raiders of the Lost Ark, Star Wars, all of those were kind of movies that really inspired me. And I think, you know, I also loved comedies. And that kind of helped propel my initial career, which started by working with Sacha Baron Cohen on Bruno, and then I had an opportunity to work on Borat's subsequent movie with him as a consultant. But with those things, it's like I loved Airplane, I loved Naked Gun, I mean, Three Amigos, I really did. And then on the other side of things, you know, Alfred Hitchcock was another kind of inspiration to me, and North by Northwest. I really love movies that can have an elevated sense of cinema while also reaching a large audience. I think those are the things that I really love. It's what I went to the movies for. It's, you know, while I can also appreciate all of the other movies that might exist as art, I think I just grew up on the things that were the popcorn movies. And I think we can still be doing a lot of those with that elevated cinema while also reaching large audiences.
I'm glad you bring up that point, because is that still possible in the era where Netflix or Apple TV Plus comes in and there are only so many streaming services people are going to subscribe to? Disney Plus is another one, and they snap up one of these movies, and I don't know, will there be movies that everyone in a generation can cite as an influence? Airplane, Raiders, Star Wars.
I think it's more crowded for sure. You know, even with TV, it's like now, you know, we when we grew up, there were like five stations and, you know, 3 hours of television a night. You know, it's like, so it's definitely more crowded. But Rian Johnson is a great example. Knives Out was a fabulous movie, cinematic, really well made, great acting, fun, and reached a lot of people. I think there's opportunities still there. And I think, you know, if you make something good, there will be an audience for it.
Did you always know you wanted to work in Hollywood, in the movies?
No, I mean, I always had a passion for it. I did, you know, I went to the University of Illinois and I majored in media studies at the College of Media. And I went on to then get a graduate degree at the London School of Economics, which, you know, I think I used some of what I learned there.
What specialty? Just economics in general?
Or? Yeah, it was kind of like a media and economics, you know, master's. So it had like some relevancy, but also—
That's a fancy degree. You could be like working at the Fed or something right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, like Goldman Sachs, or, you know, what I ended up doing, my first job in the business was working for the Jerry Springer Show. So there you go. You know,
I have a question about that later, yeah.
But, you know, if you were to say to me, you know, if would I go from, you know, being on the set of a Jerry Springer Show to, you know, watching Chewbacca ride a mechanical beast with a industrial strength wind machine, I'd say like, you're nuts. But, you know, you kind of just follow the path that life leads you on. And I think it's just that energy of the unexpected and the exciting kind of drives my being. So I never imagined going outside of Chicago, let alone being in the movie business. And I think, you know, guys like Roger Ebert were my conduit to understanding and appreciating film and kind of maybe realizing that there might be a possibility of it. But, you know, I mean, I think I've gotten, like many people in this business, it's a story of, you know, fortitude, grit, and luck. And I think that's what happens in all industries. It's not, you know, special to the film business, but, you know, people took chances on me. And I wanted to prove that there was a good reason that they did, that they should have.
So the U of I College of Media is on our minds, obviously, because you were giving the convocation speech. It's not a commencement speech. It's a convocation speech, I guess, for the graduating College of Media classes. And when you were a student here, you did have a chance to meet Ebert, right? And
yes.
Have a meal with him. Can you talk about that?
Ebert Fest was new, and he had just started... I guess it had started to come up. And as a student, we got a chance to kind of meet with him and hear about him. And I'm telling you, I don't think I've ever been more nervous to meet anybody in my life than I was to meet him. And I think that's because, you know, I had his book. His book was my Bible. He would update this like movie guide book every year. And I had all of them on my shelves. And that was kind of my what movie was I going to go watch? And I would look up what he said about it. And that was kind of my education. I mean, the College of Media is amazing. It's not necessarily a film school, although they're now becoming, he's now in, his name will have, or I guess it's the namesake for a specific cinema studies program that will be developed here, which is amazing. But he was really, and he was really somebody that inspired me to want to even think about movies in a critical way and think about a life that could involve media in some way. So it was a very special experience. And then he passed away right before I brought my first movie that I had made on my own, really, to Ebert Fest. And from what I understand, Chaz had told me over the years, or like when it happened, that he picked this movie. It was like last grouping of movies that he picked. And this was a film I made called Kumare, which was a documentary. And just knowing that full circle moment, even though I didn't get to see him and thank him, it meant so much to me. Even to have the review that was written by him was an amazing, remarkable thing that I'll never, it's one of the most important things that's ever happened to me in my career.
So I do have to ask, what did make you decide the Jerry Springer Show over Goldman Sachs as a for instance? And I don't know if that was just a for instance or a real opportunity you turned down.
No, I did. I went out to New York and I started interviewing for potential like jobs in investment and banking potentially. And, you know, there was a crazy story. I believe there was a blackout that happened in New York. And then the flight that I was on got turned around. And I was like, this is a sign. I shouldn't be doing this.
Oh, yeah. That was around 2003.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Blackout. So
it was crazy. And, you know, we were all freaked out on the plane because, you know, it was
post
9/11.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I came back and I was like, you know what? This is not the right thing for me. It's not feeling right. And I literally asked everyone I knew if they knew anyone that I could get a job in media with. And I was thinking, you know, there could be a political consultant component to it, or, you know, in Chicago, there was the only things I knew of were Oprah and Jerry Springer. And I was like, Jerry Springer sounds like it would be fun. I mean, I watched it. It looked crazy. You know, I think I learned, I was able to get into an interview and they were, you know, excited that I was interested in working there. There's a high turnover rate, or there was. I'm sure you're shocked to hear that. Kind of came in and out of that process a lot. But you know what? That experience, even though it was short-lived, it taught me so much. And had I not done that, I don't believe that I would have gotten a job with Sacha Baron Cohen later on. I think that was a very interesting piece of my past that really resonated with what he was trying to do with his characters and how he was interacting with them. So and with real people. So I think, you know, everything ends up leading to another thing and you never know where it's going to go. So I'm happy I did it. I think that I spent the right amount of time there. And once I was in there, you also like meet other people in the industry and you start to learn other places that exist that you would never have known otherwise. And that helped me move on from there and find additional opportunities.
Well, in the time we have remaining, I do have to ask you about your time at Lucasfilm. You were part of the Lucasfilm Story Group, I understand it, which oversees what counts as canonical stories among the movies and TVs, right? I think of this as like, so no movie producer comes along and says, we're going to make Han Solo and Luke Skywalker really brothers or something, right? It's like the essential story. What is the day-to-day work of that group like?
It's pretty remarkable because you say like across television film, but it's really across publishing, gaming,
theme parks,
television
even?
Film, yeah. Animation, parks. Yeah, it every story for Star Wars touches everything. And so it was a really special place to be a part of. And I thought that the idea of it was really beautiful. It was an opportunity, you know, not many companies have silos that are kind of, no silos rather, where you can all talk about everything. You know, most studios have like, our film place is over here and our TV place is this, don't touch my stuff, you know? And here it's like, we need to touch each other's stuff. And it was a really beautiful atmosphere filled with collaboration, and it was a very, unique environment to be able to help create. And again, you know, part of it was like, you wanted to, it's almost like improvisation. You know, if you've ever taken an improv class, which is like, yes, and. So if a filmmaker comes in and they have an idea, it's not like, oh no, you can't do that. It's like, how can we make that happen? You know, how can we build a lore or the opportunity to make something so cool and innovative that this filmmaker is thinking about feel real and connected to these other places, so that when you go to experience Batu at Disneyland or Disney World, you see somebody that you're going to see in a movie. And it's just, you know, to be able to give that to adults, but also to kids, it's a really mind-blowing thing.
What do you say to people like Martin Scorsese, just when we're almost out of time here, but people who say the comic book franchises, the Star Wars, they're kind of like suffocating out independent film, which obviously you're back involved with now.
You know, I think that there's room for all art, and film, whether it's Marvel or Lucasfilm or Raging Bull and The Godfather, or, you know, there's room for all of it, and it needs to be appreciated. I think that if we can make good movies, people will go and see them. If we can make good content, people will go and see it. And I think it's our job to, as producers, to find those good stories, to give them enough life in the development landscape to be built in a way where they are undeniable, and to help the filmmakers visualize it and realize it. I don't think we should shy away from movies like, you know, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Incredible job, you know, like a beautiful idea, really cool movie, and people are seeing it. I think we do ourselves a disservice to assume that they won't. And as producers, we need to push innovation. We need to help make the new Star Wars, not continue to make, I mean, we should continue to make Star Wars, but we also want to find filmmakers who are excited to make the new version of that for new generations. And that can come from all different types of places and from different types of voices and people. So, I mean, I understand, because, you know, I understand that the studios, people are, it's a lot of money that gets invested in these movies, and there's a risk factor associated with it. So our job is to make them undeniable, so that it's really hard for studios to say this won't work. And that takes place in the trenches in the development process, and helping to innovate with the creators and the writers and the directors, so that they can have the confidence and the support of the studio.
Well, Stephen Feeder, I want to thank you so much for speaking with us today on the 21st Show.
This was great. Thank you for having me. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to come down back to Champaign. It's a special place.
Stephen Feeder is a producer with T Street Productions. He was also the convocation speaker for the University of Illinois College of Media's big graduation ceremony for its students from the last 3 years. And that's all the time we have for our show today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.